You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Hello, hello. Great to be with all of you. In studio with me today is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy, doing great work, really calling men into their mission and helping to retrain men. So many men who have lost their authentically masculine identity. They're searching for models, friendship, comrades to be a part of their life story. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, Timmery, as always.
What's coming up with the Men's Academy in the near future?
Well, a few things. For one, which we'll touch on a theme of patriarchy hopefully later on, there's a gentleman who's part of a Hispanic organization connected with Compton College in Dominguez Hills, Cal State Dominguez Hills, who will have me speak there on patriarchy. And so he believes, as he says, that he says, young men have been told to be men, but they have not been told to be patriarchs. And he says, we also want for young men to learn to defend patriarchy, since by doing so, they'll be defending Christian values. So he wants me to speak on how that positioning of patriarchy is really as an upholding of Christian values. So I'm really looking forward to that. So, and that'll be at Dominguez Hills.
That is excellent. Do you have the date for that?
Yeah, that'll be April. It's Tuesday, April 30th. It'll be from 6 to 9 p.m. at Dominguez Hills.
Excellent. So anyone in that area, please come on out. Now, this is a really interesting topic, and I know you bring up the word patriarchy and misogyny, and to most people, the two go hand in hand.
That's right.
And I remember when you said that you booked this event that you said, wow, I don't even use the word patriarchy because it's just too much of a hot button topic, essentially. But I want to talk about it. So we're going to come in a little later on, talk about what is patriarchy and why has both feminism and modernity essentially rejected patriarchy. Also coming up today on the show is this insane trend, you guys. It's called going no contact. Adult children are cutting their parents off. And they're sending these letters to their parents that are cookie cutter letters. The letters all look the same. And people are starting to say, this is crazy. They've got to be talking to each other. Well, they are. They're interacting online. They're using these model letters of how can I cut off my parents, yet try to do it as, well, I really love you. And so this is a respectful thing for mutually both of us to do. Why is this happening? What's going on? We're going to be getting to some of what's happening in the culture over that. We'll also be talking about what is going on in France. So we know that protests are still continuing, but did you know that the history in France is being destroyed? And we're not even talking about it. But it really brings up a greater question. Why is it that there's this modern idea that when we disagree with someone, we turn to violence and uproar anymore rather than conversation right away? And why is it that we don't step up? We're not touching on this today, but why don't we step up in arms more so over issues such as the mass slaughtering of the unborn child just after birth via infanticide, yet we're willing to do these stupid protests when we can't have basic dialogue. So that and more coming up with my guest today is Dr. Philip Chavez, as I mentioned, of the Men's Academy. So there's this trend, Dr. Chavez. Have you heard about this going, quote, no contact?
I've heard about it, sure.
Have you met anyone who's experienced this?
Well, I've met people who've experienced this, yes. Maybe not to the degree I've been recently reading about. I mean, some of it's very, very radical, where children are not just cutting off contact, but even when they do or maintain some contact, they do so in a very rude, very malicious way. So
right. This
works in itself in some minor realms and some real serious realms. So I think there's a whole spectrum here. But yes, it is growing.
And, you know, it's something that's becoming more common, and it's heartbreaking because I have friends who say, you know, I'm seeing my siblings doing this. Or, you know, I've had friends over the last couple years who have this attitude like, man, my parents really know nothing. And it's like, okay, I thought you got over that, like maybe after high school, maybe in college. But now you're a young adult, you've been working for a few years. And I know a lot of young people who are looking back at their parents going, man, like you just lied to me, or you hid part of your past and I just look at you as a hypocrite now. And I think that there's a lot behind this conversation. I think some could be by no fault of their own. Parents are seeing their children step away. Some are seeing that. And I think this is one piece of feedback I would have. I think a lot of parents, in some cases too, where they were maybe those authoritarian parents or this is the law. And maybe these are the same people. And I alluded this to this on an episode last week that we did, that some parents don't always know how to explain whether it's their religious background or their pro-life view. And so then the kids are getting older and they're going, well, this is what the culture's saying. And you're just saying this and you're laying down the law and there's no dialogue.
Right.
And they're becoming frustrated because then if they identify with a different worldview, they feel rejected by their parents then.
That's right. And so, yeah, so I think there's a number of things going on here, Timory. Ultimately, I think this comes down to the failure of young people to grow in authentic maturity. And I think mm-hmm. what's happening, I don't think we really have visions to bring people to authentic femininity and masculinity, or rather full adulthood in both, you know. And so I think what we're doing is now we're deferring a lot of proper training to bring our children to adulthood and just keeping them in schools or making sure there are activities. So I don't think there's much of a vision of today of bringing to a child of to adulthood in their late teens. I think a lot of that's just being deferred. And so I think what we have is much developmental delay in many of these youth, which and so the maturity doesn't really set in. I think a fruit of that is going no contact.
And I think that where you're seeing in the opposite direction, people like Jordan Peterson, for example, are calling so many people, I mean, even men, into their mission, helping them to journal and self-dialogue to better understand, like, what's going, why am I in this state where I'm at, whether I'm, you know, a 30-year-old and jobless or, you know, doing this part-time work and not really finding any type of vocation, any meaning, I'm miserable. And so you have two directions, you know, some who are saying, let's rediscover yourself and how your history has impacted where you are today. And there are others who are saying, I'm just going to cut off all ties to everyone who's been a part of my life and start off anew. And it's all about me, myself, and I.
Yeah. And so basically what you're talking about, at least in that latter statement, there's a kind of a narcissistic disposition that's growing in youth. And it seems to me that if it is the case that children are growing less in adult maturity and growth, in that, one of the effects is we're called to love. And so we're called to will the, and do accomplish the good of another. We're called to sacrifice. We're called to be patient. We're called to be kind, all these things. And so what's happening is the present culture is actually doing the reverse of that. Instead of willing the good of the other, we're willing just the good of ourselves, or that's what's happening to many youth. So they're seeing everything is oriented around them. And so when their goods aren't getting met as they see it, then they get angry. And so they're navigating a world by which they believe needs to serve them instead of them serving the world.
Now, not that we're placing all blame on parents, and at a certain point, you know, you can't take responsibility for your adult child's actions as well. Sure, there have been courses that have gone wrong in parenting, and I think one of those really big concerns is the reward parenting that's so common today. Well, if you do this, I'll give you this.
Sure.
Rather than doing it for the sake of doing it and learning hard work and so forth. But what's interesting is in some of these letters, I mean, they're just like cookie cutter letters, something that you are seeing one after another that these parents are receiving, and certain things that are said in the letters resonate in each of them. One of the things I thought was interesting, one of the letters I was reading, is that the person was complaining, the child was complaining about being, quote, an extension of you their entire life. And I thought that was interesting because it's one thing to live by similar values as your parents.
That's
but
right.
It's another thing to feel like, man, like I am just not even separate from you. And I think part of that is a longing for, yes, to be an individual and to be recognized as such. And maybe that person's opinion was never recognized.
Sure.
Or maybe they themselves, as you mentioned earlier, were never taught to or ever chose to take responsibility, stand on their feet.
Yeah, so there's at least from what you initially were talking about, there's a conflict here, right? There's a certain quest for independence we all want as men and women in our lives, but at the same time, we also want the approval of our parents. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened, if a parent has such a pressing expectation of the child, how they're to think, how they're to believe, what their career path or educational path could be, I think that it locks a child into a kind of a prison that it rebels from. And I think this is what happened in great measure from youth. And so parents have certain levels of expectations, which they're communicating, sometimes even non-verbally, which adult children are rejecting.
And this is where it ties into this attitude where some kids are actually saying, like, in the one letter, it says, like, quote, I feel like I have to earn love. And they talk about how earning this love is toxic. But that child's correct. If you feel like you have to earn love,
that's right.
By the very nature of being a child, you have a right to that love. And not only just a right, but here's the thing, and this is what we need to re-emphasize in parenting today, is the unconditional love that God has for us. Well, that's where young people learn God's unconditional love, through the unconditional love of the parents. Doesn't mean there aren't rules. Doesn't mean you won't be punished. But I love you for who you are.
Exactly.
Not just the things that you do and what I reward you for or what I punish you for.
That's right. And I think underlying that, maybe even a deeper level, Timmery, is I think there are many out there who deep down don't feel lovable. You know, it's the end of a parent, really, ultimately, is you want to give your child so much of a good inheritance and a good formation and a good character development. Ultimately, the mission of the parent is to make their children feel deeply loved and deeply appreciated and deeply valued. And I think what happens if a child is not grown up in that, they themselves aren't being filled with love. And so that'll go inversely. And so they'll spend a life seeking love or making their parents miserable because they haven't received it.
Well, and seeking love in all the wrong places. I think that's a similar cause for the sexual revolt we've seen of young people away from traditional values. They're searching for meaning, even
that's
if
right.
that just means the physical pleasure that they can feel something for a second because they so deeply long to feel and be loved.
That's right, because we're all called ultimately to communion, which foreshadows and finds itself ultimately in communion with the Trinity, with the Godhead itself. But yes, I think what's happening when people aren't experiencing that communion in their own familiar relationships and their own brothers and sisters, their own friends, but mainly within the family, they're going to be seeking communion. And so people will do that through a sexual avenue instead of other more moral means.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So good to be with all of you. I have in studio with me Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy, and we're talking about this new trend of, quote, going no contact. It's a fad where adult children are completely cutting off contact with their parents, writing the same exact letter, basically shutting off contact. I wanted to throw out, as we've been discussing this, Dr. Chavez, my perspective as a millennial, whether it's maybe your kid's gone no contact or more so in the case where you want to avoid this, where you're disagreeing on political, moral, religious ideologies.
Okay.
Don't try to change their minds. Don't try to beat them over the head.
That's
respect
right.
their opinions and listen. They know what you stand for. They're, you know, they may be rebelling against you. They may be, I mean, brainwashed, but calling them that and saying those things, it's just going to push them further away. I think part of this, like, strike for independence and cutting off parents is not just the fact that they want to be, you know, on their own and separate from everyone, but they want to make sure their voice is heard.
That's right. And out of human respect, that's to be deserved, especially when they become adults. And so, you know, we may not be able to always affirm or believe in the positions of others, but we're to at least have a certain deference that a person, you know, they believe things for certain reasons, and we should hear them out in charity. And so when kids aren't heard in charity, they do take that very offensively.
And I think this is a great gift I have been given by the adults in my life, and kind of having been involved in the pro-life, pro-marriage movement very early on, is I've been around some incredible leaders, and I've been invited into the opportunity to speak and dialogue and be on committees where I've been treated as their equal when I'm very much so not in those instances. But because they were willing to listen,
sure.
it challenged me to really, where am I coming from? Why would I even speak up in these cases? And do I really have a perspective to add? But so often I see that the voice of young people is often discredited. And that's, I think, a huge lack of the openness to dialogue that we have in our culture.
That could be right. But I thought one of the things you were going to move into, Timmery, was that what happened in these experiences you just mentioned, they invited you into their world.
Yes, I was invited in. They were willing to listen, but there was an openness for dialogue there. Even if we were talking about similar issues, they were open for different perspectives that I might have brought.
Sure.
Here, other people aren't inviting others in.
That's right.
And the perspective isn't valued or even respected for the sake of the fact that you're speaking right now.
Yeah, and isn't that the case? I mean, above all, we need to know that we're respected, not maybe necessarily in our opinions, but in our approach and all the rest. And you were blessed with that with others very much.
And I think the more we can invite other people into having that voice, rather than having the attitude like, oh, I don't agree with your perspective, I'm going to tune you out, I'm going to, you know, plug in so that I can plug out of this conversation, or I'm going to end the conversation. We have to be better about allowing young people who have, I mean, anyone, but really young people, that opportunity, because if they can keep talking and you can keep asking questions, they're going to have to keep trying to figure out what they're saying rather than just spewing and throwing out random facts and running away.
That's right. And you can't expect when somebody holds contrary positions to win them out right away. Oftentimes, it's about planting seeds. You know, even Jesus thought the kingdom of heaven was seed form. In other words, you plant the seeds and let that germinate somewhere else down the road. Mm. And sometimes, yes, we can't necessarily expect when we're arguing with some or exchanging positions to win somebody over to our own side. But if we can leave them with things to think about, sometimes when we ponder and we meditate on certain things, that's when we eventually come around to a certain position.
I love that you said that. So I grew up dancing. I grew up performing. I never got nervous performing. I can maybe remember one time when the instructor changed the routine 20 minutes before the show backstage. I felt, I don't know what choreography we're doing. I think that was one of the few times I was nervous, but I think that a great gift God has given me most of the time when speaking is that I'm not usually nervous. Now, reading, if I were to have to read in front of someone in a classroom through college, grad school, it was my turn to read this paragraph, oh my gosh, my anxiety level goes up. I feel like I'm purple. Or if I have to ask a question at a conference, I hate it. But I think I've really been blessed with this gift. However, in the area of talking about the transgender issue, I get a tremendous amount of anxiety. And my anxiety is over the fact that I want so badly for the people to hear this perspective where I'm coming from, because it's such an emotional issue. And I mentioned this to a priest, Father Ogu, a couple weeks ago when I was about to speak on transgenderism at a conference. And he said something very much to me like, just don't worry about it. It's about what's going to happen down the road. You know, I think that we want immediate results sometimes. And so because we can't get them, we shut down or we become afraid or we don't have the conversations. No, we have to remember there are seeds that are being planted. There are conversations and relationships that will develop and blossom down the road.
Exactly. Remember, even when we do reach out in any kind of apostolate and ministry, and of course yours is one of much of instruction and dialogue and whatnot, we're called to give these things and do these things, but we're ultimately called to be a witness to Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So your posture, if we can make it about witnessing Jesus Christ and being an instrument of Him first and above all, then I think our work will be better established and will lead us to conquer those fears we may have.
Yeah, it takes the weight off your shoulders. Stop to myself, Timmy, stop thinking you're so important that you're going to be the one that changes this.
Exactly, because oftentimes we'll judge ourselves on how effective we are in bringing about results.
Right.
It's not about results, it's about Jesus Christ.
And we see from so many people's conversion takes place at a time unplanned, unknown, but it happens.
That's right.
It does.
That's right. And just, yes, we continue to plant the seeds and we let God help the germination.
You're listening to Trending with Timmery. In studio is Dr. Philip Chavez with me today. I want to talk about something that you and I started to discuss a couple weeks ago, and that's co-relatives. Now, defining your terms, a co-relative is kind of showing that there's a relationship essentially between mutual things, essentially. So let's talk about what an example is by defining, let's say, a word.
Well, probably the most common example of co-relative, especially that's used today, is the word right. The co-relative of right is duty. And so in a co-relative, necessarily, now we're not talking about co-relative on a grammatical level. It's important because of that use as well. We're talking about co-relative when we're talking about some kind of truth or concept which has a relationship to another truth or thing or word or concept. So yes, if somebody has a right to life, therefore there's a concomitant duty, a co-relative duty to defend life. And so this is very important. So when we talk about, you know, in fact, when we talk about how the word right is used, it's very important we understand that it is of its nature, has a correlation. So we hear much about the right to abortion, where there's no real correlative duty of that. You can only have a right to something for which there's a correlative duty. And so there's no right to abortion because there's no duty to uphold abortion. You see, now, of course, abortion advocates would say otherwise. No, it must be an absolute. So, you know, it must be held up at all causes. But there's no duty to uphold an evil or to a duty to uphold a moral law. So the use of the term right to an abortion is improperly used.
Well, and I think that, you know, some people may say, why are you spending this time to talk about the definition of words? Well, words are actually quite important.
They are.
I don't know that I would necessarily say this is the best debate tool right now, but I think that it's something for you to think about. And I think that this is much of what St. John Paul II, as Carol Votila, wrote about in Love and Responsibility. That our whole nature ingrained into who we are is this idea of responsibility for others. And
that's
so
right.
When we talk about whether it's a right, it comes with a duty, whether it comes to even our own sexuality. Sexuality comes with a responsibility to care for and bring up your children.
That's right. Well said. And so, yes, in all of our actions, there's an element of responsibility. It's not just a matter of what we want and claiming that because we want this, we desire this, we have a right to this. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there's a duty to do the right. In fact, maybe this points back to our initial conversation about narcissism, because when somebody's imbued or oriented toward their desires and their wants, they're going to see themselves as oriented to having a right to whatever they want. And again, that's improper use of the term.
Well, and that's even where we talk about natural born rights. For example,
sure.
I talk about from the perspective of abortion, we talk about fetal development and the baby developing in the womb. And I always ask the question, I asked it this weekend to all the high school students, what is the baby's right at this state in development? The baby's right is to its mother's body where it was developed and made to be during this period in time. It's a baby's right to be there based
right.
on the sexual act that was engaged in. And yet we forget things like that. And even, you know, going back to our original conversation about going no contact and how young people are going non-contact with their
sure.
parents. Well, the fact that you have this natural born right to a parent also means you have a right and responsibility to a relationship.
That's right. And the child has a right because it's born. As a consequence, it has a right, yes, to be nurtured in the mother's womb after birth, to be nurtured and protected and raised by its parents, and therefore a right to be educated. And so the parent, concomitantly, when the child is conceived, does have that right to protect. And in the growth of the child, that parent, rather, has the duty to bring that child to maturity.
And I think that this is where we can say, okay, this is relevant to my conversations. You don't need to use the word correlative necessarily, but you can see everywhere ingrained in nature is this idea of each thing we do has a level of responsibility for the creation around us.
That's right. And so nature is designed such that it has purpose and has intention, and there are ends behind those intentions. And yes, so we're supposed to act according to what nature has bestowed upon us, or that design of nature which God created. And when we do, all is brought to the best. And so in this case, yes, in the upholding of life and upholding of rights, seeing things in terms of our responsibility to cooperate with the natural orders God intended.
I always talk about freedom, you know, especially here in the United States, we
sure.
love the idea of freedom, but anymore, the definition of freedom has become total autonomy,
yeah.
which is a really kind of some of the latest philosophers like Nietzsche, Kant, Mill, all of them talk about this idea of individualism and autonomy, essentially. But freedom, same idea. It's defined as a positive, not a negative. Freedom is the freedom to do what is good,
That's
not
right.
to choose to walk away from your responsibility.
That's right. To carry out the right and the true, as opposed to maybe say, what was the word I was thinking of? Where someone thinks of an absolute entitlement to carry things out, that is not authentic freedom at all. No, it's supposed to be about bringing about the good as God intended.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Hello, hello, my friends. I'm really excited to be sharing that I will be traveling over the next couple weeks and heading into the summer. So if you're anywhere near Knott's Berry Farm, Temecula, Los Angeles area, I will be in Texas. I will be traveling. So just head over to my social media pages. I'll be giving talks on abortion, theology of the body, the science behind sexuality. What's going on? Why is this addiction taking place? So be sure to tune in. You can find me on social media. In studio with me today is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Dr. Chavez, I've been looking at what's happening in France. Now, we've known that ever since a little prior to Christmas, even, there have been these protests. I mean, France was burning for a while.
Sure.
With these protests. And one thing that's come out is that the media is not really reporting on the fact that a lot of Catholic churches people are coming in and just destroying the beautiful relics, the statues, the art. And I mean, so much of even the Catholic culture and history with the artwork coming out of France. I mean, wow,
right.
So much is being destroyed right now.
Well, you know, there seems to be an anti-religious persecution worldwide. In the Western cultures, it manifests itself in different ways. Now, I've lived for a total of about 8 years in Western European countries, mainly Italy, France, and especially Spain. And one of the things I noticed there, as opposed to what I see in the United States of America, there's such a great indifference to things of religion in those areas. Even in Rome, I mean, I think in Rome itself, there may only be about 8 or 9% of adult baptized who actually practice their faith.
You said 8 or 9.
That's right.
Wow.
In the country, it's a little higher. It's probably about 12, 13.
Does that explain the insane communion lines in Italy? Like, no one knows what's going on when it comes time for communion. I mean, there's no semblance of order.
I hadn't thought
of it. It's like, I have a right to communion. I get to go first.
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course, yeah.
So rush to the altar is a joke.
Well, yeah. Italians have a difficult time with lines to begin with.
Oh,
but in any case, underlying, there's a big difference to religion. I think there's a mentality, too, which said, well, the church was around at one time, it may have been helpful, but it has oppressed us for so long and we need a new direction. And so I think in great measure, there's a lot of underlying religious antipathy, at best indifference. And so when that's ignited, especially with the youth and males especially, I'm sure we're causing the overwhelming majority of these violence or these acts against the churches and all this looting and whatnot. Yeah, I think it follows from that indifference, that resentment toward religion.
And that's what's interesting. You can start with indifference, but essentially, in the end, your indifference will turn into resentment. And I think that we've had so long this indifference to religion. The, you know, yeah, I grew up Catholic, I don't go anymore. And then, you know, you have another generation. This is a cry for God. People are hungry for God. They're resenting what they don't have. They're resenting what they don't understand. And so they're destroying what is making them mad. It's sometimes a little boy, and any kid, but especially a little boy. You ever notice when a little kid's like really angry with something, what do they eventually end up doing?
Breaking something.
They break it. They kick it. They get mad. They don't understand it. I think that this is something that's happening, but in adult form today.
That's right. Well, Timory, you know, in these countries in Western Europe are fundamentally very socialist countries. And we're finding more and more are men marginalized in the workforce. So there's a high percentage of men who aren't working. And that will bring around a great measure of frustration and anger, and looting and pillaging and things like that will be a natural consequence of men who huddle up together and want to express their anger.
Isn't that profound? And that statement alone is so profound. It's a testament to social systems that don't work. It's a testament to the need of masculinity
that's
ingrained in his nature to be able to provide and to have purpose.
That's right. And so if a man doesn't have an orientation toward responsibility and to be constructive, he will then act to be irresponsible and he will act to be actually destructive.
And I think this is why you see even some people just being recruited right into Islam anymore, because it's saying, here, this is your purpose. This
That's
is what
right.
you're going to do. Dive in, join us. I mean, they said a high number of young Hispanic men in Mexico have been recruited into ISIS, and all over the world, in fact. It's not just there in the Middle East. This is happening.
That's right. And there is a vision which does instill a sense of purpose, a sense of eternal purpose. And the way they pray and some of the things they do are in some way in a masculine mode, which is attractive to a young man.
So one of the questions I have to ask is, you know, here are all the violent protests. We're seeing churches just being completely destroyed in France. And we've talked about why is it that young people are turning toward violence? Well, here's in Europe, but also here in the United States. It's these protests and arguments that we saw so wildly rampant, especially on university settings after the election of Donald Trump. And although it's settled down, there's still this great animosity as the pulse of the college campuses today.
That's right. And it's not diminishing. And again, I think what we're seeing is, you know, as we earlier talked about, this narcissistic kind of approach to things that young people want to see things their way. And they're very offended if you don't hold the positions that they hold. And so that offense, their immaturity, their responsibility, their lack of good development will lead them to take violence against another to make either make their point or try to convince another or just express a certain anger that they're not holding what you're holding.
You know, I may be crazy, but it's just an idea. I think we're at a point where a dialogue is so lacking. We've got to do something about it. And it may just be me, but I think that we've got to do something kind of radical about it. Maybe that thing is if you have a friend, a family member who you guys aren't seeing eye to eye on a certain topic, you say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I've heard actually exact models of this from people who have converted into Catholicism, maybe where, you know, one person was Catholic, one person was Protestant. And they basically, the Catholic friend said, okay, in 2 weeks, you and I are going to talk about this. What if we did the same thing? Okay, we're disagreeing on the topic of abortion.
Sure.
Okay, let's both do our research. And in 2 weeks, let's come with our best arguments to have a conversation, not to argue, but to have a conversation. And let's keep going at it. And let's go at it. And I think that this is something where you're seeing dialogue among evangelicals and Catholics, and you're seeing the greatest fruits of conversion happening. What if you and I were so bold to take back the culture of dialogue?
That's right. And, you know, in the past, there used to be many forums of dialogue,
yes,
especially that men and women shared on different kind of forums and levels. And I think what's happening, too, men aren't getting out much of what they want to because there's not these natural forums, these groups, these fraternities for them to work much of this out in their lives.
You know, when I was on the college campus, actually, by the way, for those just joining us, this is Timory Millington. You're listening to Timory Jaja. Still not used to saying my new last name of like 3 weeks, but you're listening to Trending with Timory. And remember, when I was in university setting during grad school, I worked for the university, and there were a lot of conversations. People would come and ask me because they knew I was like super anti-contraception, super pro-life. They'd ask me all these questions. And I finally said, how about we start a women's group think? And so basically what we did is we had three topics that we were going to discuss, and each person had to take a position, either pro or for or against the topic. Even if that's not the position you held, each person had to take a position on it. And so you had three topics that were discussed. You could only present for 5 minutes. And then you had to, maybe you had to present both sides. It depends on how we did it. And then from there, it opened up to dialogue. And it wasn't an emotional, oh, this is what I think.
Sure.
This is what makes sense. And it was so cool because we ended up getting a ton of different girls coming out. People who didn't feel comfortable public speaking, willing to speak in these small group settings. It's just 5 minutes. And people who were like, I actually don't know where I fall on this issue, but I'll research it and present the two sides.
That's right. It's important, Timory, in that exercise you're talking about, that people are pursuing to learn arguments about a position, whether they hold it or not, but it's to exercise to get into truth about a position. And so in some way, if you can maintain that and teach people that to lead just, okay, what are the arguments? What is the position? You take away that emotional element. So people,
yes,
are able to look at the position for what it is, or at least for what people say about this. Mm-hmm. And so for people to bring their guard down and not just argue because they hold a position or want to get to a certain end, it's a very good thing. So what you did, I commend you on that.
It was so fun. If anyone's interested, we should start another group at throughout the county in San Diego, because for me, I think also what appealed to it is I'm not like a women's small group type of thing, because it's not my thing. I won't complain. That'll be a separate soapbox for another day. But it allowed for that dialogue, like you're saying. And I think people really like that opportunity because it allows you to also say, I don't know, or I don't know enough, or this is what I think, but I might be wrong. I remember at Eagle Eye Ministries, they have a summer program for young adults. It's called the Ecclesia Institute. They're running it this summer. And during that, each Friday night, we actually had a night where we would take up one issue. We'd have two debate teams, essentially, and you had to debate this issue. Remember, one of the topics we did was, whatchamacallit, whether or not there should be technology in the classroom for young people.
Interesting.
And so people had to stand on both sides. They had to take their position. question and debate it. And it really makes you question and think your perspective, or if you even have one for that matter.
Sure. And in those exercises, again, too, Timory, what you're doing, too, is you're empowering people with the truth. No matter what our age, when we hit the age of reason and as we grow in development, to know what is true and what is right is important, or even just to have objective truth and knowledge. It empowers the intellect, which for so many years we've been in environments which the truth hasn't been appreciated, or we haven't been learned how to foster what it is to grow in that truth. We have the intellect, its object is truth. And so when the more we're able to be fed with it, the more fulfilled we can get. And I would imagine people that left these forums felt very fulfilled.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I also think that, you know, we've seen the degeneration of men in the areas of education as well, which is just very interesting. Fewer men than before are going to college, more women than men are being educated. And even
sure.
in some of the STEM areas, there are more women entering into those fields
sure.
than before. And I think that when we challenge men physically, I think men also have to be challenged mentally in that competitiveness. It makes them choose a side, a position.
That's right. Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think men have been challenged enough intellectually. And of course, part of that too, Timory, if they don't get some of their physical needs out, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to deal with the needs of the intellect. So first things first, we make sure the boxing clubs are very well established. And after they get that out of their system, then we lead them into the intellectual life.
You know, my husband just joined jiu-jitsu and he loves it. That opportunity
Good.
To tumble, roll, and have that challenge so important.
It is.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We mentioned at the beginning of the show, my guest today, Dr. Philip Chavez, was actually asked to come and give a presentation on patriarchy at the end of the month, April 30th, here in Southern California. You can find out more information online. I'm sure you'll have
sure.
info at the Men's Academy over the next few days.
Yes.
So his website is themensacademy.org. Now, patriarchy is not a word I usually choose to use. Nor you in
Nor
your work with men.
That's right.
But for the sake of discussing what it is, we're going to use it here today.
Sure.
And I'd like to kind of look at why has feminism and just modernity overall rejected patriarchy? I mean, just last week, the argument was being made for infanticide by a Democrat senator. For infanticide. For killing an already born baby that's not even impacting the life of the mother. And the argument started off, well, this is misogyny, X, Y, and Z. Today, misogyny and patriarchy are tied up among one another. Now, misogyny, you know, degrading of women type of attitude is
yes.
not what authentic patriarchy is.
Exactly. Authentic patriarch, I mean, in the Greek roots, it means it's not male rule, but it's ruled by a father. And so, you know, the perfection of a man is to exercise himself as a father. So in some sense, you know, the word is very, very appropriate. If a man sees himself as holding the role of a father in the home and leading his children, his family that way, that's a good thing. But patriarchy, it's certainly in the past somewhat alluded to somewhat of a
male-centered culture.
Yeah, male-centered culture, which, you know, fathers were men, they weren't women. And so if it was a patriarchal culture, it was a male, we'll use the word in this case, dominated culture. In other words, men held positions of leadership. And so that's very, very offensive to somebody who maintains that there must be absolute equality for all. But you know what, I think what's happened too, Timory, and I think some of the older women, some of our original feminists, you know, when you get into their hearts and souls and learning about their stories, many of them were offended by their fathers.
Yes.
And so they suffered under them, whether physically, verbally, socially. And so many of the feminists, their anger isn't just from a simple position about upholding an absolute equality. Their anger is from what they believe is a system, or rather, where a mode of oppression they were under their fathers and maybe under their uncles and under men generally.
And so they were under a disordered masculinity.
That's right.
And we're making masculinity worse with how we're trying to destroy it now, rather than saying this is part of the problem. This is why we did a whole episode a few weeks ago, because, I mean, for the first time in history, the American Psychological Association has come out against masculinity and some of those traditional values among men that are good or can be taken to extremes that are harmful and not what they actually are.
That's right. And when, well, yes, and some of these qualities, when they're exercised properly, it's a good, noble thing. So when a man leads, protects, and provides well, sacrificially, and selflessly, you have a very you have a happy wife and happy children who know their identity, who know who they are, and know where they stand. But instead, you know, if a man finds himself emasculated, instead of being a true leader, he becomes a tyrant. Instead of being one who's a real protector, he becomes someone who's an oppressor. And instead of maybe become someone who's a selfless provider, becomes like a miser or a Scrooge or a spendthrift. And so there's many defects, unfortunately, which we have seen in masculinity because men haven't risen to the level of maturity to which they're called in many cases.
And that's where you spoke at the beginning, like, what is patriarchy? You define the terminology, and you talked about how in its language, it's the father taking on that responsibility. It's not a male-dominant society. It's a society where men see their ingrained role to protect, as you teach so often, to provide, to be that person who sees, okay, if things aren't going right in these areas, it's my responsibility to make sure my spouse is cared for, to make sure that good is being promoted in society, that good
That's
laws
right.
are being implemented, that the land is protected.
That's right. And concomitant with all of that, to be a good leader, to be a good protector, to be a good provider was alluded to already. It takes great sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do. And for true leadership is very sacrificial. We've come about in a culture which believes leadership is something about arrogance or somebody being power hungry or they're wanting to dominate. True leadership is not that at all. It really is service, and it's service at a great level of sacrifice, which oftentimes some men and certainly women too, they don't want to really do things like that. They would oftentimes, we'd rather see somebody else lead because we know how much that can take from us.
I remember one of my professors in grad school often talked about how Good Friday would be nothing without Holy Thursday. And he really wanted to make sure we knew this because this is, you know, not a lot of people really see and think about why didn't Jesus wash the feet of the 12 apostles? He was showing that servant leadership. He's saying, if I don't serve you, if I do not sacrifice myself for you, this is nothing. It's not about my glorification and, oh, wow, look, I died on the cross. No, I'm showing you what you are to do here on Holy Thursday, by washing one another's feet, getting down and grounded, humiliated. I mean, the feet in that culture was looked down upon because, I mean, they were barely clothed in their foot region, barely had any shoes, and so they were very dirty.
That's right. And in this case, too, Timory, remember, how does the scriptures put it? You know, the night he was to be betrayed, you know, he broke covenant with his disciples. So even though he knew they were going to turn against him, he still served them. He still led them. And this is what a true leader does. Even if he knows down the road he may be rejected by his children or even his wife down the road, he still must do what he needs to do, what he's called to do in true love for all those he serves.
He knew that Peter was going to deny him
That's
three
right.
times. He knew that Judas was going to betray him. Like, he knew all of these different elements.
That's right.
Yet he took on that responsibility of knowing that as the father, as the leader, and still laid down his life for him.
Yeah, and that's true leadership. When you're still doing and carrying out the right for all those under you, even if you know down the road they'll run or betray you or abandon you in some way.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray on Spirit Catholic Radio Network, on Relevant Radio Network, Modern Day Network. We are across the country. It's so good to be with all of you. If you don't want to miss an episode or hear deeper conversations that tie into one another, go head over to radiotrending.com. You can listen to more episodes where my guest, Dr. Philip Chavez, joins me. Most recently, we actually talked about this new federal court judge who has deemed that a all-male draft is unconstitutional. And boy, if we talked about that today with patriarchy, that would be a little too much
that's
for people,
right. That
I
might,
think.
Yeah, that'd be an overload, yeah.
So that's a different episode if you want to head over to radiotrending.com to listen to that. But coming back to patriarchy, Dr. Chavez, what are some of the key elements that you plan to present and discuss in your presentation?
Well, as I alluded before, in fact, in the previous show, you know, as much there's many avenues and many duties a father has to lead his wife and to lead his children. And there's many things he's supposed to fulfill in leading, protecting, and providing. But in a certain crowning element of to being a father is to communicate love. And in that love is to help your children feel that they're really beloved and delighted and valued. And so what I find is that a father is able to give that and bestow that when he himself knows through his own prayer life, through his own journey, that he himself is loved by his own earthly and heavenly father. So what I find, in fact, I titled the talk Patriarchy or Sonship, because it's important to be a patriarch, to really lead in a position of father, to really communicate what it is to be loved or to communicate your love. One has to feel love first. You can't give what you do not have. And so it's important to walk the journey of sonship first and walk that well and learn how to receive that well before you can actually bestow that on others. So that's a key theme I'll be working on in that presentation on April 30th.
And that's such a powerful message, because I think it's a message not just to men, but to all of us, that
That's right.
when we do not really establish our relationship of unconditional love, that we know God loves us unconditionally,
sure.
we're going to have a hard time knowing God, who is perfect. If we don't understand his unconditional love, how are we in our imperfections going to even try to model that to others?
That's right. And or to even understand the Christian journey, because God himself wants to be known as a father. And he wants us to believe that through baptism, we have become divine sons and daughters. And so the whole Christian mode actually is one of father-child. And so everything about the Christian life, you know, he invites us to his supper, to his table, which is ultimately a table of sacrifice. But he leads us and guides us as a father. So the reason why patriarchy is so important, it's not just for stability and family life, but a good, healthy sense of patriarchy will help one in their own religious development and understand that, especially for men, understand the development of Christian virtues in light of what he's supposed to exercise for the good and to really serve and to love others.
Well, as you're talking about this fatherhood, I mean, look at the specific words that Jesus speaks throughout all of the New Testament. He talks about the mission the Father has given
That's
him,
right.
that if you do not love the Father, you will not receive the Son. If you do not receive the Son, you will not receive the Father.
That's
I
right.
mean, there's so much there. I mean, he teaches us how to be children. And, you know, I think some people push back against this language, like, oh, I don't want to think of myself as a baby, as a little child. Okay, you also have adult relationships with your grown parents where there should be that unconditional love.
That's right.
The model is that familiarity and that trust that's present, that if your parents were truly the best of parents, which God is, the best of fathers, then you would see that there is that total trust, nothing but that goodwill toward you.
That's right. And it's because we've been incorporated as sons into him. And, you know, in the whole Christian journey, Timory, our starting point is to embrace this identity. Jesus was identity driven. You know, even in his entire passion, John 17, his entire prayer is one as a son. He navigates his entire life on earth as a son. And so he provides us with that way he talks about to move first as a son, to understand, to embrace that identity. And all that we do flows from that in the Christian journey.
Well, and this is at the heart of the gender ideology debate, that who we are is what's important, not
That's right.
not just what we do. Who we are defines what we do. And there's that power in terms of who I am as a child of God.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.